news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait, there's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. Downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 90, the 36th Chamber of Shaolin.
Yeah, this is the Shaw Brothers classic from 1978, the 36th Chamber of Shaolin. For those who don't know, the Shaw Brothers, prolific studio in China, produced over 1,000 movies. So many incredible kung fu classics like The Five Deadly Venoms, Return of the Five Deadly Venoms, and on and on. Crippled Avengers, sequels to this one, but this is one of their most esteemed films, the 36 Chambers of Shaolin. And of course, this movie has a lot of cultural reach. I mean, look at the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah, I guess RZA from Wu-Tang, well, not only they get their name, the band name origin from these series of Hong Kong movies and the star system and the movies that were made so prolifically over there. I guess, yeah, he would go to the Deuce, as he called it, 42nd Street, and these sleazy theaters as a teenager, and he describes it sitting around with, like, homeless guys and glue sniffers and perverts and watching these action films that had a lot going for them, not just in terms of, well, blowout action, but in terms of thoughtfulness as well.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, the first Wu-Tang album was called something to do with Welcome to the 36th Chamber or something, do you recall?
I can't recall. They do have a 36th Chamber album, but I don't know if that was their first
one. Okay, yeah, yeah. I used to listen to a bit of Wu-Tang Clan, nothing to fuck with.
Yeah, they're great.
So yeah, this one is one of the classics.
And really weird, otherworldly. We talk about this with Italian films, where you have people talking different languages in different locales. This thing is weird because you have a Mandarin version, you have a Cantonese version, you have dubbed, you have subtitles, you have villains variously described as Mongols and Tatars, who are completely different people, and depending on which print or which Blu-ray or DVD version you happen to see.
And yet they're all played by Asian actors.
So. Yes. Yeah. And it's impossible to really pinpoint the historicity of this thing, because while there was a Shaolin monk, apparently, on whom this character was based, the details are fairly murky, and through the various retellings of this Shaolin Kung Fu master, it's been sort of diluted and added to, and as myths and legends go. Mm-hmm. So it really is an odd duck.
Mm-hmm. And it is true what we said before, because when you do watch these Asian Kung Fu movies, depending upon what version you happen to have in your hands, I mean, you might get a different experience. I mean, whether it be dub, whether it be subtitle, whatever, you will get a different... different names, different lines of dialogue, etc. Yeah. So
sometimes your senses deceive you, which mm-hmm. is one of the themes in this film.
So this movie, it takes place in a village in China that is under tyrannical rule by the version we saw, the Tartars.
Let them have their tattoos.
Nah, I was going to say the same thing. Yeah. Every time I hear Tartar,
Tatar, the Tatar.
I know. I always say Tartar. I think Tartar. I think of Monty Burns, you know, that classic episode of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Let them have their Tartar sauce, you know?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, they're under the jackboot of this Turkish tribe, and I guess these sort of ruthless generals are, you know, going and running amok amongst the town folk. Mm-hmm. At one point, I guess they're, you know, destroying a couple of the guys' small businesses mm-hmm. by chopping up their dried fish. There's a quite hilarious scene where the soldiers just go in and lay waste to all these guys' businesses while they're, of course, pleading, come on, don't...
And the abalone. Don't go near the abalone.
Yeah. or the sea cucumber.
Yeah, exactly.
An aside here, tangential thing, as dating a girl from Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And, we went to this restaurant in Toronto's Chinatown. I was the one white guy there, a couple hundred people there, and I dined on sea cucumber, which is the single most disgusting thing I've ever eaten in my life.
Okay.
And I eat everything. There's not a single thing I don't eat. Anything, you name it, liver, Brussels sprouts, all the foods we hated as kids. I eat everything. I love everything, but sea cucumber... Draw the line there.
I've never eaten.
It's like Jell-O
cucumber. And why is it called sea cucumber? What's the deal
with sea cucumber? It's not a cucumber.
It's not a cucumber. Okay, it comes from the sea, but is there any sort of similarities to cucumber? Is it the way it looks? Is it?
It's basically an aquatic slug.
Okay.
So if that sounds appetizing for you, I suggest you grab your cookbook and go nuts. And but yeah. And, anyway, yeah. Back to the abalone.
I'm quite an adventurous eater myself, but I'll steer clear of the sea cucumber.
Yeah.
I barely like land cucumber.
True.
So. It's probably the blindest water.
It really is. If it disappeared tomorrow, we would not give a shit.
Yeah, that and celery. I mean, come on. You know, do we really need that? No. Anyway.
No.
Getting back to the movie. So you mentioned the track rule and. The leader is General Tien, mm-hmm. and he has second command, Lord Tang, and they're just sadistic motherfuckers. I mean, they rule with an iron fist. Everybody has to kowtow to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you're living under a tyrannical regime, you naturally have...
Uprising.
Dissenters, rebels.
Yeah.
And in this case... And you know, it's interesting, because at this point, I'm looking at this movie, because I saw... I'm going to go on a little tangent right now, okay? There was a period in my life, and I was obsessed with Asian cinema. And I was making weekly pilgrimages to a mall we have, just a little bit north of downtown Toronto, called Pacific Mall. And I was purchasing tons, like any Asian film I could get my hands on. I was looking for stuff like Battle Royale. I was looking for stuff like, you know, Ichi the Killer, Takeshi Miike's films. And I was getting them,
mm-hmm.
and I was also getting a lot of Asian Kung Fu movies. And one of them was, of course, the 36th Chamber of Shaolin. Now, I don't know, this was maybe about 10, 12 years ago. I watched it, really enjoyed it, haven't watched it since. So when I revisited it for this podcast, I couldn't say I remembered much of it, but then as I'm watching it, it was almost like it was all coming back to me scene by scene by scene.
Yeah.
It's interesting because as I was watching the movie now and revisiting it, I'm thinking I was seeing a lot of parallels with George Lucas's Star Wars. You know, it's interesting because, and I'm going to bring up The Force Awakens again later on in our discussion, but a lot of the criticism of The Force Awakens, because I saw The Force Awakens and I love it. I'm a Star Wars fanatic. Mm-hmm. I know you're not as big a fan as I am. A lot of the criticism is that the story beats are very similar to what is now Episode 4, The New Hope, A New Hope. But the reality is that what Lucas was doing when he made the original Star Wars, to that point, was not Episode 4, it was just Star Wars. He was borrowing from all the films that influenced him, the Western serials,
Kurosawa,
The Hidden Fortress, that was a huge influence. And really, when you look at Star Wars, it's a classic retelling of Joseph Campbell's heroic journey, what they call the monomyth. And in this movie, it's basically the same thing.
Well, like a chosen one kind of guy who...
Well, yeah, but there's not even that. But I mean, you look at, you know, you have in Star Wars, you have the galaxy under tyrannical rule of the Empire, Darth Vader, that would be your General Tien. You have a group that's banding together to usurp this dictatorship. They're the rebels. They're sort of in hiding.
And the stormtroopers are the Tatar, the spear-wielding warriors.
Yeah, there's also, I mean, there's a Yoda figure in this movie.
that's true.
Another thing that spurred Luke to be... That's the thing about the heroic journey, is that there's some, you know, it's you take a common man, and some sort of event happens in their life, and it transpires them to go on this journey where they become uncommon, where they become heroic. And
I guess there'd be no Han in this.
No, there's no Han Solo.
Other than the Han Chinese. Oh, there you go. It all ties together. That's the main ethnic group in China.
And in Star Wars, what spurred on Luke Skywalker was the death of his well, what he thought were his parents, right?
Yes.
And in this one, too, you have our hero, whose name is Sun Tae. His parents, too, were killed. So because of that, he has to go into hiding. And but before that, I mean, he's a student. And his professor, his teacher, by the name of Professor Ho. He's the, you know, the sort of the underground leader of the rebels. He's the one who's saying, you know, like, we have to band together and we have to somehow defeat this regime. So he's almost like the Obi-Wan figure, perhaps, you know?
Interesting.
There's all these little parallels to Star Wars. I mean, it does sort of, the parallels end at a certain point. But I was noticing that. Now, like I said before, The Force Awakens will come back into this discussion as we continue on with Sun Tae's journey. So yes, the students form a bit of an ad hoc rebellion, but it's not exactly the most well-organized rebellion. They're smuggling those back and forth in pieces of fish.
Yeah.
At one point, one of them is found. And yes, this is what
Spurs the narrative.
The destroying of the fish markets. And Sun Tae has two compatriots. They're on the run. One of them gets killed. But Sun Tae manages to abscond. And
to obviously develop his skills. He wants to go learn the Kung Fu arts.
Right. Yeah. And Kung Fu is relegated to the Shaolin Temple, where the monks, who do not involve themselves in worldly affairs, learn Kung Fu.
Yes.
And our hero, Sun Tae's aim is to make it to the Shaolin Temple, be accepted as a monk, be ordained as a monk, and learn Kung Fu, so that he can then go back, avenge, you know, his fellow pupils, his teacher, his parents, and overthrow the regime.
And he has to learn the Force, so he has to ride the gauntlet of going through each one of these chambers. And of course, he's an impulsive young buck, and he's met by the abbot and the monks there with very little fanfare.
They
treat him like the bum that he is. He smuggles himself over there in a bok choy cart. He's like hidden among vegetables.
Yeah.
And then he just arrives there on the doorstep.
The monks make their way down to the village to get their provisions for the week, and they're carrying the cart. And why is it so heavy? It's because Sun Tae is hidden in a bok choy barrel. And when they bring him up there, and he spills out, and right away one of the monks goes, "You're spiteful and emotional, you know? You cannot be." And of course, again, I'm thinking, you know, Luke Skywalker, you know, it's like, in order to learn the Force, you know, you have to, "Much anger in you, I see," as Yoda would say, you know? So he had to, you know.
Yeah, he's an impetuous vagrant, and they said, okay, you can recuperate here, because his leg has suffered incredible injuries fleeing from the Tatars.
And then you best be going.
Yeah, and then get the hell out of here. Like, your kind is not needed here. We're going to be civil, because we have, you know, we can help you recuperate with your bowls of congee or whatever the hell they were giving them, and tending to his wounds, and then after that, you're on your own.
Yeah.
But, you know, they can sense that he's a hard worker.
Well, the head monk basically decrees that it was fate that brought him there, i.e. He's the chosen one. So he grants him stay. And then we flash forward 1 year later, and our hero, his head is shaved now, he's a monk, and he's sweeping the floor. And this is what monks do.
Yeah.
I spent, on my travels, in Thailand, I actually spent a week in a monastery. And they made me sweep floors. Because that's a meditative act, you know? Yeah. There's a zen of sweeping floors. And then one of the higher monks says, asks him, like, you know, so you've been here for a year? What, you know, how do you like it? How do you like your stay? And he says something to the effect of, yes, I've been here for a year, but, I mean, all I've done is sweep floors. I want to learn kung fu. Well, dude, all you have to do is ask. Because, he says, anybody can learn kung fu.
Uh-huh.
You want to learn kung fu? There's 36 chambers. Each chamber will teach you something.
Yeah, or 35 chambers, actually.
Right,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Indeed.
And, yeah. Of course, being the young, impulsive, impetuous guy, you know, I always want to quote Mike Tyson when I hear the word impetuous. Like, my offense is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. But anyway, yeah, he says, okay, take me to the top chamber.
He wants to start the very, very top. Yeah, like, the 35th chamber.
Yeah, and he just gets, you know, bitch slapped back down to, like, lower levels where he belongs, where the tasks that you got to perform to go from one level to another are a lot more mundane.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the most notable being, I guess, one of the earlier ones where it's he has to traverse a body of water on logs. And
this
they're obviously
the
very
chamber.
Slippery logs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In order to get to the dining hall, they have to hop onto floating logs in a pond and then hop off and go into the dining hall. If you slip, if you fall, if you're dirty, you're not allowed to enter the dining hall.
Yeah, no kanji for you.
No kanji for you. By the time... no soup for you, no kanji for you. By the time he cleans himself up, because obviously he's not successful on his first attempt,
yeah,
all the kanji is gone.
Yeah,
right?
Log rolling is really difficult. Like, I've seen it on TV and that. Like, I feel like we should bring some lumberjack science to you because we're Canadian, but yeah, I've never done that, but looking at it, just like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And this, they have to, they have to really earn their keep. They got to earn their meals by crossing this river. He repeatedly gets dunked in and until he finally masters it.
Yes, but then they throw another little trick in the ointment, another little fly in the ointment. Then the logs are no longer bundled up together as one. Then they're just loose flowing logs in the river, sticks in the river. And they have to then, yet again, you know, hop across those sticks. So basically, he has to learn... this is sort of like a Yoda-like figure who's you know, dispensing these little homilies and stuff. The wall is low, but the power of Buddha is high. Because he's looking over the wall where the higher monks are just able to walk right to the dining hall. And he's like, well, why can't I just do that? At one point he takes a plate and he skims it across the water. So that's what they have to do. They have to be light and they have to skim across the water. So he practices and practices and practices. And before you know it, he can do it, but not. It's not enough that he can do it, okay? He can do it on one foot. He can lift his one leg up, leap fucking high in the air, hit the wall, hit the log, and into the dining hall. Oh, Sante, you're so great. You're the best. Amazing.
Yeah, and really, he is the best, and we'd be remiss without saying who Sante is. He's the great Gordon Liu, / Gordon Lau, depending on how you want to say it, who obviously martial arts practitioner extraordinaire who was, you know, not discovered, but obviously, like, found in order to star in some of Tarantino's movies. The guy is built like a brick shithouse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's 60 now. He looks fucking 40. The guy is absolutely incredible. He's a great actor, too.
Yeah. He was, I mean, he was featured in a lot of Shaw Brothers movies, and then Tarantino, being a huge Shaw Brothers fan that he is, in Kill Bill,
got his services. This guy, he's just amazing. He just carries the show.
So he masters the first chamber, and then he goes to the next chamber, and this one's quite interesting. Actually, he goes from the first chamber to the 34th chamber.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He doesn't do it linear. Okay. Nor do we see all the chambers. We only see about 9 or 10. But this one has to do with arm strength. And what he has to do is he has to keep his arms parallel with knives attached. And he has to carry barrels of water up a hill. And of course, if his arms falter, if they start to, you know, weaken, he's going to cut the shit out of his sides.
Yeah, just a much more ratcheted up version of the, you know, the similar exercise we did in boxing class at the end. You hold your arms out, stretched, you know, in a Jesus Christ pose. Instructor comes along, taps you on your arms. If they fall to your side, you got to give them push-ups. But here, there's way more at stake because you could, just basically impale yourself.
Yep.
And then all the while, you got to lug buckets of water up to the top of this, tower. That's amazing.
And then he masters that, and he goes to the 23rd chamber, where he has to ring a bell. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, you'd think.
But not in the Shaolin Temple.
No.
Because he has to hold a 12-foot piece of bamboo by the very end, and at the end of the bamboo is a weight. They gave it a very weird sort of, it wasn't pounds, it was like shintos or something.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called.
And he has to master his wrist strength in order to ring that bell. And of course, he can't do it at first, he drops it, but then he practices.
Ring my bell.
Yeah. Another chamber has to do with eyesight, where he has to stand between these two gigantic incense sticks.
Yeah, they look like giant cigarillos.
Exactly. And he has to follow a light, but using only his eyes. And as it's sort of like a candelabra, and as it vacillates back and forth, he has to follow with his eyes. But then the head of this chamber really, you know, gets the thing going. And if he turns his head, he's going to burn his head.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the next chamber. And this guy is just going through each chamber like, I don't know. He's. I mean, they mentioned many times, oh, he's our star pupil. He can, you know, he's incredible. You know, he masters every chamber so quickly. And, you know, there's fighting and weapons. That's the next thing.
And toughening up, I guess, calluses on your head, so headbutting like bags of sand or whatever the hell it was, and sand gauntlet.
Okay, that one was one of the best chambers. Yeah,
and all the while, I mean, a lot of time has transpired. I guess he spent years
mm-hmm.
mastering all these techniques so that he can return and eventually fight off the overlords
mm-hmm.
and free the Canton from its oppressors.
Now, before we get to his you know, when he actually goes back out into the world, I mean, I want to, as I said before, as I'm watching this movie, I'm sort of watching through a different lens, and it's funny because over the holidays, Star Wars: The Force Awakens was ubiquitous, you know. And everywhere you go on social media, people are talking about Star Wars, or they liked it, or they hated it, or they were indifferent, what have you. And I came across a term, a trope, that I'd never heard before. It's called the Mary Sue. Have you heard of the Mary Sue?
Yes, I have.
Okay, see, I never heard of the Mary Sue before.
If I'm not mistaken, it's someone who instantly gains prowess or proficiency mm-hmm. in some sort of discipline without mm-hmm. any sort of training. And I guess this was a criticism levied against Rey from the film.
She
it's not like she has to pay her dues. It's mm-hmm. just like, oh, bam, you're in. It's
someone who's so preternaturally good at everything that there's no conflict as to whether or not they're going to succeed, right? And Mary Sue is sort of levied against female characters, but then they have the male version of Mary Sue, which I can ultimately, I've heard them called Marty Sue or Gary Stu or what have you. And now, so yeah, I heard this criticism of Rey. Yo, Rey's a Mary Sue. Now, again, I'm not going to get into the whole Force Awakens because I don't think that Rey was a Mary Sue, but I'm watching this movie and I'm like, God damn, he's a Mary Sue.
Huh.
Like, he's just, like, there's every chamber. He's just blasting through it. There's no, I mean, yeah, okay, they have a little token, like, oh, I can't lift the bamboo pole, but then in the next scene,
he was gaining momentum and strength from from having progressed from the earlier ones. He eventually was getting better. And when he was traversing the logs, there at one point he had to feed himself with a bowl of congee while standing on the log.
That's
so
true.
The guy was, you know, I would say he was paying his dues. How many more years of dues paying
agree,
could you
but
do?
It just
like, look at Seagal uh-huh. when he was, like, recuperating in, what is it, Out for Justice? What was the one where he's lying in the hospital bed and then he finally comes back
God,
to...
I don't know.
Those recuperative training montages last all of 5 minutes. In 36 Chambers of Shaolin, it's basically 50 minutes of the movie is training
but
montages.
But just the fact how he was able to get through these chambers with such ease. I mean, and it's like, oh, you're the greatest of the star people. I was like, I'm looking at him going, you're a Mary Sue. You know, because now all of a sudden this whole concept of Mary Sue is in my head and I'm reading this.
I think it more referred to some like instant proficiency in something without much training. So here mm-hmm. we could say he was trained in it. So, but who knows?
Okay, but then there was something that then took that theory of Mary Sue and kind of just threw it out the window because he's so good, he's then given the power to take over any chamber he wants.
Yes.
And he actually wants to create his own chamber. Now, that's going to come into play in a moment
or
two.
Yeah, but first,
there's a naysayer.
Yeah,
there was
of course,
a naysayer right from the very beginning. And he says, okay, if this guy is going to take over a chamber, he needs to beat me in combat. Mm-hmm. And Sante agrees, and he gets his ass kicked.
Yeah. Yeah, he had to go back to the drawing board, and then that was neat, too, because he tries various weapons, like traditional ones, to no avail. He's continually being bested, and at the end, he would say, okay, I could have killed you. How many times have you struck, Sante? Oh, 5 times. You're obviously superior to me. He's deferential, bowing to his
combatant. He's coming back for more.
Until he develops his own weapon.
The three...
Three-headed
joint. No, it's called a three-joint stick.
Three-joint stick, yeah. Like a bamboo stick in three different parts. So it's joined at the... it's
nunchucks, but with an extra...
Extra bar. Yeah. And finally, he is able to, best this guy. And
right. But it took him about 17 or 18 times. Yeah. And so, okay, great. There you go. Okay, now I see some struggle. Now I see some real difficulty. You're not a Mary Sue.
Yeah.
So... He is given the option, as I said before, to take any of the chambers and lead it. But he wants to create the 36th chamber. And what the 36th chamber is to actually go out in the world and teach Kung Fu to the masses. But again, the monks do not involve themselves in worldly affairs. This is not taken...
It's anathema to their belief system because the whole point of it is to, like, very Zen, not to use it, to have this. And every martial arts is the same. You're better off not using it. You use your wisdom to, avoid.
And speaking of anathema, another thing is anathema to a monk is taking a life, and in order to get rid of this regime, lives are going to have to be taken.
It's true.
So he's punished. Uh-huh. They said, your punishment is you got to get out there and you got to collect alms. You got to collect charity. And don't come back until you've collected a certain amount of money.
Which is what monks do for the better part of their day, at least in Thailand.
Yeah, in the morning, they go out for the morning alms run. I had the honor of joining some monks when they were doing that.
Wow.
Very interesting, yeah. So, he's out now in the world. And you know what? This is, 10 years later. And, what is it, the Tatas?
The Tatars.
Okay, because that's a part of it. They're still ruling with an iron fist.
Of course, yeah.
And he witnesses some chicanery going down on behalf of Lord Tang, and he interferes in worldly affairs. And before you know it, Lord Tang is bested in combat and pretty much killed by Sante. He's got a sword right to the guy's chest, but the deciding blow that kills him is done by somebody else who actually steps on the sword.
Yeah, it's just semantics there.
Exactly, yeah.
And meanwhile, the Tatars are the equivalent of the red shirts in Star Trek, and they're just basically like cannon fodder as the townsfolk, tries to restore the dynastic rule to Canton, they rise up, and at various points, I think one of the millers organizes a rice dropping, where flour, okay, yeah. to pummel the, their adversary, so they, and then they eventually fend off and overthrow the yoke of tyranny.
Yep. He basically gets a group of vice, quote-unquote, hot-headed youths together, and they do it. And, of course, this then comes down to a climactic mano-a-mano between Sante and General Tien. Very cool battle. Mm-hmm. And in the very final scene of the movie, he's teaching Kung Fu to the masses. The 36th chamber is open. I don't know if he got the go-ahead from the monks to do it.
Yeah.
He's there. And then there was a sequel. So, it's a great movie. I mean, this is a kick-ass, must-see movie. It's really cool because, as you said before, about 50 minutes of this film, it's almost 2 hours in length, is devoted to his training, which is really awesome. It's not a quick little montage set to, some sort of pop song where they go, within 4 minutes of,
Seagal with a bamboo stick, hitting a post,
So, the training element is...
Protracted, to say the least, yeah.
And it's damn compelling.
Yeah.
The actual overthrow of the tyrannical regime is almost secondary to this monk's heroic journey. Again, a lot of parallels to Star Wars. Lucas... Bored from the best. Interesting, how I read it. About I read him as a bit of a Mary Sue because this was the first time I came up with. I heard about a Mary Sue, and now I'm like every time I watch something, I'm like, is this person a Mary Sue? I don't like this name. I don't like this. I find it almost derogatory. Yeah. Yeah, do you know where it derives from? Some sort of Star Trek fan fiction, apparently.
Oh, wow.
Where a girl wrote a story about, I'm not a Star Trek fan, but there's some sort of admiral named Mary Sue, who was like the youngest admiral ever, and she could do everything and anything, and that took on a life of its own, and so the Mary Sue. But yeah, at the end of it all, he's no Mary Sue.
No.
He's Sante, the leader of the 36th Chamber of Shaolin.
Taiga style. Shaolin warrior. Incredible martial arts, amazing montages, fantastic acting. The only debit would be some sort of par for the course with these 70s Hong Kong action films, some really bad wigs.
Oh, yeah.
But again, you know, at this time, if a, you know, I think Gordon Liu / Liu was... might have been a practicing monk and would have shaved his head anyway. He's affixed with this ridiculous, like, sideburn, sort of slick ponytail rug thing, and, you know, what are you going to do? You know, that's, yeah. Still.
You forgive these things, yeah. You know, you forgive the hokiness. You know, another thing, when people watch these Asian chop socky films, you know, whether it's a Shaw Brothers production, whether it's a Jackie Chan movie, if they see it dubbed, you know, it's, oh, let's laugh at the bad dubbing. Let's laugh at how the mouth doesn't match up with what's being spoken, you know? And yeah, that's just like, that's such a facile way of watching a movie, you know? Because there's so much awesomeness in these kung fu movies. You know, you watch some early Jackie Chan, you know, I'm talking about before he made his breakthrough in North America with Rumble in the Bronx. You watch something like, you know, Drunken Master or the original Police Story. I mean, this, they're fucking mind-blowing, you know?
Yeah, or the old Chow Yun-Fat movies, all this stuff.
I was going to say, yeah, I was not even getting into the Bullet Ballet of
yeah,
you know, John Woo and stuff. I mean...
And we're going to admit our biases here. Like, we prefer not to have much wire work. We like to keep things grounded, if you excuse the pun, in reality, where it's all about the martial arts and not about the flying through the air kind of business. At least, in my opinion, for that, I prefer the sort of...
Yeah.
Like, even Master of the Flying Guillotine was getting a little bit crazy, like, more toward the Enter the Dragon side
of things. Iron Monkey, like, was a film that, like, took that wire work and just ran with it, and then that was then brought to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which was a huge success, but I mean, yeah, a little impossible, and of course, even, you know, we see it in movies like The Matrix, right, where they would use that sort of ridiculousness, but...
okay, so what did we learn from 36th Chamber of Shaolin?
Well, what I learned is that Kanji plays a really large part in becoming a master kung fu warrior, right?
Yeah, as it should. It's delicious, especially in winter climes. Like, it's so filling and sort of satisfying. It's really fantastic.
And again, I'm gonna say, I mean, I'm like you, I'm an adventurous eater.
Yeah.
Not as adventurous as you. You go for the liver and the sardines. I can't stand that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like congee. But hey, you know, if that's all I'm offered.
Hey, if there's pork in it, you'll eat it. And then, like, nice mustard cabbage. Oh, I'm whetting my appetite for some congee right now. what I learned is that there's nary a woman to be found in this whole movie. Like, I can't think of...
That is true.
Maybe one of the villagers.
Yes, yeah.
Like, maybe Sante's mother. Was she killed in this? I can't recall, but my God, the ratio of men to women in this thing is really
awesome. It was a variable sausage fest, yes, indeed.
It would definitely fail that Bechtel or whatever.
Test.
They would have to devise a new test just to deal with this movie.
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, the Mary Sue factor.
Yeah. Yeah,
whether past that now, yeah, or the Bechdel test, which is this new thing that, you know, flying colors.
But it passes with flying colors when it comes to just masterful kung fu epics. I give this thing 4-star. Holy crap, like, I'm just so inspired to get back into these films again, and I can't wait to revisit
some of this. Now we gotta go to Return to the 36th Chambers,
yes,
you know?
So we have to. We gotta, you know, Master the Flying Guillotine. We're gonna come and bring some of our best black belt podcast chat to some of these films. We just love these so much. Your star rating?
I'm going to give it 3.5. You know, when I was younger, it was a 4-star all the way, but now that I'm a little more analytical and critical, I'm going to give it 3.5. But yeah, no, I mean, it's just highly recommended, and it's pretty fucking awesome. So yeah, 3.5 for me, 4 stars for you.
Yeah, definitely. And
for more, check out our
5-star website.
Black belt website.
Yes. www.reallyawfulmovies.com. On Twitter, awful_movies. And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.